Welcome to On a Mission. This is episode 32. This is a space where I get real and go deep with my guests. They are all folks who are living out their callings, paying close attention to their lives, and each doing so with special flair. I'm your host, Maline Dupree Dominguez. I'm a minister, teacher, writer, and general people enthusiast. And I can't wait to share some of these thought-provoking people with you, folks who are ready to get real and go deep. You know how sometimes you hear someone talk about climate change, global warming, the island of plastic in the ocean, all that stuff, and you just feel so weighed down, so guilty and, well, hopeless? Get ready for a hope fire hose. Anna Robertson is the Director of Youth and Young Adult Mobilization for Catholic Climate Covenant. Anna tells us how Catholic Climate Covenant can help you connect to transformative work in your neighborhood and offer resources for your already existing groups. She also points out that so often we are told what to say no to when it comes to climate change, but wait till you hear what she says we need to say yes to. Bottom line is this: you are not the only one who has hoped to be more responsive to the climate crisis and maybe has felt like your efforts are not adding up to much. Anna is about to lay down some practical and mystical ways to be present to the pace of nature, be attentive to the movements of God, and find what she calls credible hope in the midst of this climate-related mess. Listen in. Anna Robertson, welcome to On a Mission.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
It's so great to have you. And I'm super excited to have a person from Catholic Climate Covenant to explain that organization. So can you start out by telling our listeners what is Catholic Climate Covenant?
Yes, thank you for the question. So Catholic Climate Covenant, the way that I would describe our work, we exist to really mobilize and activate the US Catholic Church around climate change, specifically with an awareness of the fact that, like pretty much everything in the world, climate change has the first and worst impacts on communities that are already marginalized in other ways. So there's that intertwining, we talk about care for the earth, care for the poor, this awareness of the intertwining between the cries of the earth and those who are oppressed.
Yeah. So there might be people listening who are like, wait a minute, why is the church getting involved in climate change? Isn't climate change a political issue? And aren't we supposed to keep like politics separate from church stuff? Why do you think people of faith should care about climate change?
Totally. Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting question. And I think that there are a lot of ways to answer this question. It's important to just say right from the start that care for creation, integral ecology, to use a phrase that Pope Francis has really embraced and popularized in Laudato Si, this concern for climate change, it is not only, I would say, resonant with and consistent with Catholic tradition, but it's really integral to it. And Pope Francis is kind of known as the climate pope in a lot of ways, but he's not the first pope to speak explicitly about this issue. His two predecessors named it explicitly as a concern as well. And within our Catholic social tradition, care for creation is right there alongside solidarity and preferential option for the poor and vulnerable. It's really at the heart of our tradition. And you know, there are going to be people who answer this question with scriptural exegesis or with kind of a theological inquiry into the foundations of Catholic faith. And those are going to be really important avenues for a lot of people to arrive at making this connection. And I would answer this question differently on different days. And today, what's really capturing my imagination, when we think about why should people of faith care about climate change, it's almost turning it on its head. So it's changing the question to how can we help people of faith to see that they already do care about climate change? There's just no part of the human experience that this reality doesn't touch. And it's so important that we, you know, speak about science, that we understand the ways that this is grounded in really solid science. And there's a way that talking about climate change can seem like this abstract reality that already is touching our lives every day. And, you know, in my faith tradition, I see a God who has made a choice to really engage in the messiness of the world and who resides with a particular potency among people who suffer. And so climate change and the collapse of Earth's life-sustaining systems is the arbiter of really staggering suffering. And it's the suffering that's already happening. And so my faith tradition calls me to turn toward that suffering and to bring compassionate curiosity to my own suffering. So to bring that same attitude toward the places in myself that I feel walled off or afraid, and the many places that I'm still complicit. And the last thing I would say about why people of faith should care about climate change is people of faith, and specifically people of Christian faith, have a responsibility to attend to this because of the historical role that Christianity has played in sort of sustaining the conditions that have created it, you know, and I'm talking, say more about that. Yeah. I'm talking here about the doctrine of discovery, for example, which provided this theological green light for violent colonization of present day Americas and the attempted genocide and forced displacement of the indigenous peoples who were and are here today. And it's that same worldview that set us up for the situation that we're in now. And also this proliferation of theologies that have really kind of severed the spiritual from the worldly or the natural from the civilized. We really have to dig in and think about the ways that our theologies can be life-serving in this moment, because they can be at the root. They call us to interconnection and to stewardship, but we've sort of wandered away from that in a lot of our emphases.
Yes. So well said. This culture of domination is what created this problem in the first place. And we have a responsibility to try to mend that. Wow. Absolutely. And we are nature too, right?
Exactly.
That's so good. So you work with particularly young Catholics, right, in trying to mobilize them around addressing climate change, taking action. What have you noticed about what works to engage young people, especially young people who identify as Catholic, around this issue?
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's no single kind of message that works for all Catholics or all young Catholics even, because of course, Catholics aren't monolithic. And at the same time, there are trends and things that I've noticed and my 9 months in this role, I'm not a newbie to the young adult Catholic world as a young adult Catholic myself who previously worked in university campus ministry. But one of the things that I think I've really noticed, I hear over and over and over and over again from young Catholics, is this sense of loneliness in this work, this feeling that I'm the only one who is all three things, young, Catholic, and interested in climate change. And the irony, of course, is that I'm hearing this message day in and day out. So no one of those people is in fact the only one. There's this real hunger for community. And this is where I see part of my work is figuring out how do I step in and help to create the container for that community for people.
Yeah.
I think, now what the phrase I'm about to use, I know I didn't come up with, and I don't know who did. If anyone knows and wants to send it into the podcast or something.
Yeah.
But I really think that part of our role as faith leaders is offering a credible hope. And that's the credible hope thing. I know I didn't come up with it, but it's really compelling to me. And so when I think about what message works with young people, I think about this from a pastoral perspective because of my own training and work in campus ministry. And not just young people, but all human beings are longing for a credible hope. And when it comes to climate change, that's a really tall order, because I think on the one hand, we have to give people a sense of how they can be actively engaging in a meaningful way that has impact.
Yeah.
We also have to be asking ourselves, what does hope mean? Right? Because this is a human longing, this desire for hope. And so when we look at some of the systems that have gotten us into this mess, they are also trying to answer that question. When I think about consumerism, it is trying to offer a credible hope. And it's a hope in what? It's essentially a hope that I like to say that, like, we can get out of this thing alive, by which I mean life, which we're not going to.
No one gets out alive.
Exactly. And so when it comes to climate change, on the one hand, it's not about embracing a fatalism. Like, we aren't past the point of no return. There is real meaningful action that we can take right now that has very significant consequences for present generations, right? As well as future ones. And if the thing that we're hoping for is that we can maintain our exact way of life in a country that has been historically responsible for a hugely disproportionate amount of fossil fuel emissions that have created this situation, we need to change what it is that we're hoping for, because that's not giving us happiness anyway. It's just creating an emptiness inside of us. So how can we speak compellingly to that for young people? I would say for everyone, but I think that there's a way in which young people feel a certain, you know, just height of existential anxiety about their futures.
For sure. I hardcore agree with that, because, you know, I teach high school students every day. And I think that you're absolutely right to name that there is a heightened sense of existential threat among teenagers. And I would imagine also young 20s as well. People are freaked out, like, about what the planet's going to be like in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm loving this credible hope. We'll Google it, we'll figure it out or something. But what should we, and I'm going to say we, let's say American middle-class people who have traditionally caused a lot of damage with our consumerism, our overconsumption of resources, what should we hope for?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Once again, so many ways to answer this question. I feel like you could do a whole podcast series on that question. But what's been feeling really resonant for me recently, you know, I mentioned at the beginning the intertwining historically and in the present day of the subjugation of Indigenous people with the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of talk currently about Indigenous wisdom and the importance of what Indigenous wisdom can offer to this moment to, like, get us out of this situation. And I'm always aware of a real need to just be mindful about venturing into that territory, because I think it can become tokenizing
for sure,
really quickly. And there's a need to hold that appreciation and respect together with an awareness of this history of harm. And where I am getting a lot of hope right now is the way that learning about Indigenous ways of life, which also are not monolithic, but right, if we think about the Amazon, for example, there's this sense that the Amazon is just this untouched, pristine, biodiverse region. But in actuality, a lot of the rich biodiversity that we see there is precisely as flourishing as it is because of generations of human intervention. Mm. And so when I think about the idea of stewardship, for a long time, it honestly was not very inspiring to me. And I think it's because in my culture, which is sort of white, middle-class, US American, there weren't lots of examples of what meaningful stewardship could mean. But I actually think that in our own tradition, like, we have these examples as well. Like, it's right there in our creation stories as well, this call to kind of partnership with creation. And in some environmental communities, there's this despair around like the human possibility of being anything other than like an invasive species.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that our hope is, to use theological language, the sense that as human beings, like, we're not beyond redemption. There's not like the best thing we can do for the earth isn't just disappear, but there's a way that we can actually harness the healing of the earth. And many of the indigenous communities in the world have like never lost sight of that. I don't think it's something that, or I think it is something that we all have somewhere in our DNA, but that has been lost in by generations of neglect. And so really this reclamation of a human vocation to active stewardship by which we can become beneficial species is where I have hope.
Wow. Boy, did you just touch on something, this sort of secret suspicion that maybe the planet would be better off without us, and maybe the best thing we can do is disappear. I have never really articulated that, but boy, have I been motivated by that line of thinking many times. Thank you so much for putting words around another way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So I was going to ask you about complicity, you know, because a lot of us, again, white American middle-class people might get overwhelmed. I mean, everybody might get overwhelmed, but we might get overwhelmed because of our complicity in so many systems that are not contributing to the wellness of planet Earth. I mean, how do you personally address complicity and like feelings of overwhelm with yourself about feeling complicit, maybe feeling guilty about being complicit, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, it's a process. I'm very much a part of society. And for some people, their discernment leads them to sort of disentangle and opt out of systems.
Yeah.
And that's not where my discernment has led me. And so there's ways that I'm still very complicit, some of which is just from exhaustion and the amount of effort that it takes to disentangle. But I really think that it's important to acknowledge and make space for my feelings of guilt in myself, right? The answer is not to be like, you don't belong here. But I also think when we look from a social perspective at who benefits from this paralysis by guilt, it's not the earth. It's not the people who are getting the brunt of the impacts of climate change. And so I try to just hold together this trust that starting with what's right in front of me, doing my best that I can do and being generous with myself, that will in turn help me to be more generous with others. And I'm really skeptical of motivating people through shame and blame. It's really understandable why that's happening a lot these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that it completely shuts me down. And so when I assume most other people function on some level like me, because like we share humanity, I really think a more pastoral approach to meeting people with like understanding about all the complexity around complicity is going to free us up to be more creative with each other in community. And that's, we really have to do this in community if we're going to create other systems that it's possible to be less complicit in.
Yeah. Thanks. Brilliant. So, actions to take now. When you're talking with young people or anybody, what are some of the top actions that you recommend for people who want to take action right now that's meaningful in some way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that on the one hand, we know that when it comes to climate change, we have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So in terms of if I can pick any issue to begin advocating on, I mean, that one is one that is just really important. And there's also so many interweaving kind of environmental justice issues that are happening on more local levels. So I would say both learning about and advocating at that kind of big picture around reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but also finding out about what kinds of environmental justice issues are happening where you live, really beginning to personalize this for yourself. Mm. Because climate change already is, whoever you are listening, climate change already is impacting you. Mm-hmm. So beginning to figure out how that's the case. And if you live in a community that is being impacted by it, then you are also being impacted by it. I would also say, if you're a young Catholic and you're listening to this, I really think that young Catholics have a special power right now in activating and inspiring our church. And there's a way that I know in, especially the climate crisis, sometimes it can feel like there's this burden that's placed on young people to do all of the prophetic legwork.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just real. There are generations of people ahead of us who've been doing this. And so I think part of what we need to be doing is building intergenerational community. But if you're a young Catholic, know that people want to hear from you in this church. People want to know what makes you tick. And you have power to really begin to move the consciousness throughout the levels of this huge system that is the Catholic Church. And so, I mean, action-wise, that could look like getting together with a few friends in your parish or in your diocese and approaching a priest or a bishop and just saying, hey, like, this is what's on our hearts. We've heard that you want to hear what's on our hearts, and this is what's on our hearts. And just beginning that conversation and maybe asking, finding out what is happening in terms of creation care in your parish or diocese, and seeing if there are ways that you can advocate for a really bold embrace of this piece of the church's mission.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Talking institutionally then about diocesan level, or even school or university, I guess. Can you talk a little bit about the vision, either of Catholic Climate Covenant or more broadly within the Catholic Church, to engage Catholic institutions in the work of addressing climate change?
Yeah, so it's a great time institutionally to be asking this question, because we are at the very beginning of a 7-year process, we being the Global Catholic Church, called the Laudato Si Action Platform. And this is basically an initiative that's coming from the very top, calling on the church to really integrate the themes, the fullness of Laudato Si, which of course is itself consistent with our Catholic tradition, to really integrate that into the life and mission of the church across all these different institutional levels. And so this is a way that it's been soft launched, so you can find out about it online right now. I believe the website is laudato-si-actionplatform.org, and then the US hub for it is godsplanet.us, and you can learn about different sectors that are working to ask these questions of how do we take these big ideas and bring them down into the concrete of our systems and our structures. Mm-hmm. And there will be ways for parishes, for individuals and families, for institutions to really begin to engage with these questions in this really cool process that, yes, is coming from this encouragement and call at the top, but that really is seeking to be animated by the hyperlocal.
Yes, I love that emphasis on hyperlocal. And that's what you recommended as well for our action. Like, look around, right? Our neighborhoods, our cities, see how climate change is impacting, and then decide to do something about that particular thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And the local is also just where the hope is, I think. It's where in relationships, you know, Pope Francis talks about the importance of a culture of encounter. And I think that that's super applicable here as well. We need to get in close with our neighbors and have real conversations and find out, you know, what is it that you value? That question of, you know, what can be motivating for Catholics around climate change? It's really just a values conversation. It's a person by person conversation. There might be themes, but when we have these one-on-one conversations and we can show up unarmored and curious about each other as human beings, I really believe that that's where real change begins, but it's also how we can sustain ourselves in the work.
Isn't that handy? It does both. It, yes, like, it helps us achieve the goal and sustains us along the way.
Exactly.
Wow. Cool. Well, I will definitely link those resources in the show notes for this episode, the Laudato Si Action Plan and godsplanet.us, for sure.
That's great.
So how about you, Anna? How did you come to be a person who was passionate about climate and faith altogether?
So for me, I always go back to this memory of being probably 7 or 8 and hearing about the end of the world for the first time. To get kind of dark really quickly with my answer to this question, it wasn't something that I'd really been exposed to in my Catholic upbringing. It just wasn't an idea that really had a lot of resonance in my particular church community. And so I remember the first time that I heard somebody talking about it, just being completely gutted, just really scared, and gripped by anxious thoughts about it for at least months afterwards. But in some ways, it's transformed and it's been a lifelong companion. I don't think that that person in that moment when they talked about the end of the world so much introduced me to a new idea as they exposed me to a fear that I have that I think most humans share, this fear of uncertainty, of impermanence, of the unknown. And so I think I do feel that in a particularly potent way, just because of whatever my disposition. And so you can imagine then when I first started learning about climate change, global warming, it was very scary because it seemed like up until this point, this fear had been really irrational. But suddenly there was this thing that was like, no, the world as you know it is really at risk. And so in my years since first learning about climate change, when I was probably in high school, you know, it's really been a dance of turning toward and turning away from it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can contribute to a sense of imposter syndrome in this work, because there have been years at a time where I've not really actively engaged with this. But I also think that another way of looking at it is that it's just really relatable. Yeah, and
me too.
I think that that's how most of us have operated. And I think that there's something really unique about what I can offer to the world. I don't know exactly what, you know, my unique gift or mission in this life is, but I think it has to do with that turning toward this uncertainty, turning toward this human relationship that we have with our own fragility, but at the same time with God, with mystery. There's like this thin veil that separates those two things. And so that's a very mystical answer, I guess a more practical one, about how climate change in particular became the world in which I really explore that kind of a big question, would just be through my exposure to one in particular, I would say radical community. When I was in college, many people listening are probably familiar with Bethlehem Farm. It's an intentional Catholic community in Appalachia, yes, that really transforms a lot of hearts and lives. And to me, it was the first place that I really saw people living as if the gospel were true. And with a lot of intentionality around our relationship to the earth. And so it showed me a hope-filled way to say yes to a lifestyle. So often with climate change, it's about saying no, and that's important. We have to say no to consumerism. There's a lot of sacrifice, but we also have to find spaces where we can say yes, where we can run towards something. And I think that Bethlehem Farm showed me that that was possible and really set me on the path that I've been on since.
Awesome. For those who are listening that do not know Bethlehem Farm, tell us more about it.
Sure. Bethlehem Farm is an intentional Catholic community in Appalachia, in West Virginia, that hosts high school and college groups mostly, as well as some general like adult week for people who aren't affiliated with a high school or college. So you can think an alternative break type trip where you go for a week at a time. You learn from the folks who live there in community about sustainability, simplicity, community, prayer. And there's a low-income home repair program that partners with folks in the community to offer low-income home repair. So students are getting that sort of on-the-ground experience of service, as well as learning about it's a farm where they grow a lot of their own food. So learning about sustainable agriculture and just a really radical way of being in community, I would say, is one of the biggest learnings. As someone who has spent a lot of time there, but of course is not like a spokesperson for them, they might describe Bethlehem Farm differently. But to me, I think people's experience of community there, of this different way of being human together, is probably one of the most significant offerings that they make in the world.
Yeah. What would you say is your biggest takeaway from your time at Bethlehem Farm about how to be community?
Yeah, it's been a few years since I spent a lot of time there, but I think for me, it was really one of the first places where I felt like I was just really wildly accepted for who I was. And I do think part of my journey in life is realizing the ways that I close myself off to the experience of feeling accepted. So I don't say that to downplay the communities that embraced me up until that time. I think that I really was loved in those communities as well. But there was something about Bethlehem Farm that really helped click for me that my gifts had something really important to do in the world. And so I think I see in retrospect just how important community is at creating spaces where people's gifts can come alive.
That's so beautifully and sensitively said. Thank you for sharing that takeaway with us.
Yeah.
Oh, you mentioned that in the realm of climate change, often the litany is what we need to say no to, but you find that rather a lot more people are compelled by what are we saying yes to. Can you give us a couple things that we ought to say yes to that helps address this issue?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, I think part of it is just saying yes to that culture of encounter, right? Because we're trying to reject, again, to borrow language from Pope Francis, we're trying to reject a throwaway culture, but we need some, you can't just eliminate a culture into a vacuum. There's something we have to move toward. And so I really think climate change is a crisis of spirit. It's a crisis at the most fundamental level. So we really have to run toward different ways of being human together. We have to run towards different ways of being earthlings, like being creatures among other creatures. And so practically, what does that look like? I mean, I think it slowing down. So for me, it's been really crucial to really dial back on my media intake, like social media intake. That's not for everyone, but for me, it's been really important to open up space for me to just slow down enough to really begin to feel into a sense of relationship with the natural world. Mm-hmm. This is something that I still don't feel. I'm so aware of how atrophied my ability to feel that relationship is. And that's not just because of social media or anything like that, but social media did keep my brain going at this pace. And the natural world is much slower.
Yeah.
And so creating space to even just reorient ourselves, creating space for God to move. God is always moving in our hearts, but creating space to notice it, to be able to differentiate between, you know, to use Ignatian language, the discernment of spirit. So what is the movement of God in me? And what is the movement of not God? How do I differentiate between those things?
Yeah.
And I think on a more practical level, you know, saying yes to difficult conversations, saying yes to deep self-care, but also discomfort, saying yes to invitations to show up in the world, especially invitations that are coming from communities that are bearing the brunt of the impacts of climate change. These are the folks who have the solutions because they've been living with the impacts already for decades or longer. And so really listening and showing up and learning as we're able.
Awesome. Thank you.
Of course.
So particularly, how can listeners get involved in the work of Catholic Climate Covenant?
Yes. Thank you. That's a great question. So I'll highlight just a couple of different ways. Really, you know, this is a question of how to hold together. Catholic Climate Covenant is this national organization, but we're concerned at the local level as well. So how can you get involved? If you are Catholic and you belong to a parish, you can find out if there is a creation care team that your parish already has and get involved in that. And we offer resources for creation care teams and can network creation care teams with each other. So your creation care team doesn't have to be a part of Catholic Climate Covenant, but we're here to support that work. The Laudato Si Action Platform is another way that you can get involved, just perusing the different opportunities for what can it look like to really apply Laudato Si in my life. And then just really getting creative with, in my situation, how can I bring people together, whether that's in a parish. If you're a young person, maybe you're affiliated with a parish, maybe you're not. It's really, really common that young people aren't affiliated with parishes. And that's just a reality that, you know, I want to work with. I want to meet people where they're at. And we need you in this, regardless of whether you belong to a parish or not. And so, you know, on our website, you can sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop about developments within our youth and young adult mobilization work. But really, really, I would just say, find those people who are where you are and ask, what can we do? What do we care about? What's already happening? How can we support it? What is our particular niche in this work, and how can we animate it? And Catholic Climate Covenant is here to be a resource for that, whether that's networking you with other individuals in your area or across the country. We have webinars that will help train you on, you know, how to use advocacy techniques to talk with church leaders, how to write an op-ed, things like that. So there's, we're really a clearinghouse for resources to support this work. And I'm always interested in hearing from young people specifically who are already engaged in this work or who are really wanting to. And so if you sign up for the newsletter on our website, you can hear about ways to stay plugged in with youth and young adult mobilization at the Covenant.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's what you call it, the Covenant.
Yes.
Okay. I got to get hip to the
Catholic Climate Covenant works too.
Right. Good. I'll link to the newsletter sign up also in the links in the show notes, and of course to the general website for the Covenant as well, so that folks who are interested can, yeah, start to get plugged in with their local communities, or if they already are plugged in, get some more resources and support from you.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Anna, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun to just think about these questions and really begin to explore and formulate some of my thoughts on them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for doing this podcast.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to On a Mission. Find all of the details about this episode, including links to Catholic Climate Covenant, the origin of the phrase Credible Hope, God's Planet, and Bethlehem Farm at MarleneDupreeDominguez.com. While you're there, make sure you sign up for my weekly email newsletter, which contains prayer tools, cool stuff to read, and links to other progressive, faith-based stuff around the internet. If you enjoyed the podcast today, contribute on buymeacoffee.com/Marlene. Your contributions help pay for and promote the podcast. And today we're donating to Catholic Climate Covenant in honor of Anna and each of you. See you next time.